Episode 8, Associate Pastor Bianca Luna interviews Urban Grace congregant Dr. Anna Shaver.
Welcome, friends. Thank you so much for being with us here today for our other episode of The Last Stop. Today, I have our interviewee, Anna Shaver. Thank you so much for being with us today, Anna.
Hi. I'm glad to be here.
Great. So let's just get right after it. Anna, can you tell us a bit about yourself? Could you give us a glimpse into who you are, the identities that you hold, and the ones that have a deep significance into your personhood?
Yeah, I am an autistic ADHD trans woman. I transitioned just about a year and a half ago, and I was in this church when I was going through that process. I have a partner and two kids. The two kids come with me to church pretty often. And so I'm leaning into and learning how to hold the mummy identity they gave me.
Mummy?
Mummy, yes.
Yeah, so
yeah, they call me mummy. They decided to call me that because there's already a mama. So
yeah. Mummy, like M-U-M-M-Y?
Yeah, like British, like mimum, yeah.
Oh, okay. I was thinking of like the dead thing that walks around.
I mean, we were talking about doing that for Halloween next year. Like if I did like a mummy costume, but also was pushing around a baby carriage,
that
would be kind of fun.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I'm also an English teacher at Seattle Central College, and I teach mostly freshman composition and some linguistics classes. My background is in linguistics, not English.
Oh.
And linguistics takes a descriptivist perspective. See, my autism's coming out and I'm lecturing you. That's the idea that the way that somebody talks is right because that's the way that they talk with their friends and their family and their parents.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of history of saying like some groups of people speak good English and some speak bad English. And we're trying to find ways to say like, If you speak with your friends and they understand you, then you have good English.
Oh.
And it can be really unfair and problematic to ask people to adjust their language to fit a white, Midwestern, Victorian, middle-class, educated standard of speech because not everybody talks that way.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So you've already mentioned that, you know, you obviously attend Urban Grace. How long have you been here and what brought you here?
I've been here, I'm bad at numbers. I've been here about 2 years, I think.
I think that checks out.
Good. Good. You can hold me to account.
Yeah.
In person. And then my family lived in West Seattle before this, and we were thinking of moving to Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew Siri and Mandla, the Kaundas, and thought that maybe this would be a good place to check out. So I started watching online during COVID before we moved here.
Hmm. Nice.
For a few months.
And so were they the ones who brought you here?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yeah. Cool. That's awesome. So you already had the connection of family already here.
Yeah, right.
So Anna, when you first arrived to Urban Grace, as you already mentioned and when you were introducing yourself to us, you did present as a man and made that transition while you were already here.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you think the congregation did with that shift? Like, do you feel the church did a good job in supporting and accepting you through that process?
I feel really grateful to the congregation here. I think that it took a lot of pressure off knowing that I would be safe here and being able to transition. I remember about a month or two before I transitioned, I told a few people who were congregants here, and like I just felt so much love and support.
Yeah.
I'm just really grateful to be here and for all the support that I've gotten.
Yeah. I remember that. And I remember like not really feeling like I knew you like when you presented as a man. Mm-hmm. And then when you came into like your true full self, you just like blossomed. And I'm like, oh, this is my friend, Anna. You know, like I finally got to like know who you were. So, yeah, I think it was, like, really cool for all of us to be like, oh, now we know this person.
I think in a lot of ways, I feel like I didn't know myself before. I've felt very strongly, like, in the last year that I wasn't really a complete person. I was cutting myself off from a lot of things that were really true about me. And so I do feel a lot. And I think people have seen how much more outgoing I've gotten since I transitioned and how much less anxious, which is just, it blows my mind because I expected to be way more anxious and I'm not.
Oh, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's great. I'm sure that's been a really freeing experience.
Totally.
My next question for you is, what would you suggest as a church we can do to take another direction, another step in the right direction of being more diverse and inclusive as a congregation?
I think that's a really interesting question to ask and an interesting way to phrase the question. I feel really strongly that it's important to be more inclusive and more welcoming. Mm-hmm. I think that's always a good thing to move toward. But I also feel like there is a tendency in churches and other organizations to say we need to be more diverse. Mm-hmm. And I think that that has come out of a lot of realizations in the last few decades about organizations that are just very like white centering.
Yeah.
And yeah. But I think that the urge to say we need to be more diverse is also still a pretty dang white urge. Like it's a pretty white thing. I'm not saying that the people who say that are necessarily white, but I think it's coming out of a pretty like white colonialist philosophy to say we need more diversity. How can we get that? Like, where do we go to get more diversity? Because it's still about extracting a resource and bringing it to us. And I think that our calling as a church is more to say we're part of a community. We are who we are. How do we be welcoming to the people who want to come here?
Yeah.
And then how do we cooperate with the people around us without saying we're trying to get you to come here.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's not like a tactic.
Yeah. But I do think that like through being more welcoming and through being more equitable in a lot of ways, we will end up being more diverse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I don't think that's the goal. I think that's a byproduct.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, that's a good point. So let's talk about microaggressions. What are microaggressions? Well, we know what they are because it's exactly what it sounds like. It's not just one big or a few medium-sized insults, but really small ones that give you a bit of aggression response that you kind of process more internally. So do you feel microaggressions personally, and do you feel they play an effect in the way you see the world and how the world receives you?
Heck yes. I get microaggressions. To be honest, I don't get a lot of them here at Urban Grace, and I'm not just saying that because I'm a guest on the podcast.
Yeah.
I think this has been a really safe place for that. To me, there's a difference between a microaggression that comes from lack of knowledge or lack of consideration versus like an honest question.
Right.
You know, I think that, you know, even like maybe around the 90s when people started talking about like things being politically correct or PC, like it brought out a lot of fear for people because they're like, great, like now there's this list of things I have to memorize that I was using the language before in a way that made sense to me. And now suddenly, like, I feel like I don't own my language anymore and I have to change everything to, like, appease certain people. And I really think that has missed the point because really I think what's important is to develop empathy and say, I use my language, I speak, I have relationships. And the people I have relationships with are important to me, and the way they feel is important. And so if I find out that something I'm saying is hurting somebody, then I don't say, well, great, now I have to adjust my language.
Right.
I say, like, how can I be somebody who can, how can I care for this person? Mm-hmm. How can I show them respect? So when you and I have talked before, you were commenting before we started talking today.
Yeah.
You said that you like when I encourage you to ask me questions.
Yeah.
And I feel that way with everybody that I know. I think that knowing that somebody's coming to me with care and curiosity and they have a, there's something that they want to learn, I have a lot of space for that. What hurts me more is when people say something that out of an assumption they're making. Another interesting thing is that I think I got more, I'm going to say more. Some of the microaggressions that hurt the most were the ones before I came out because people would make assumptions about me based on my appearance.
Yeah.
More than they do now. So people would say something like, that's just how men are, right? And they would say, like, you know, nudge, nudge to me.
Oh.
And I'm like, I wouldn't know. But
yeah.
I couldn't say that because I wasn't out yet, right?
Yeah.
Or like, yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of things like that. I get more microaggressions now over the phone because of how my voice sounds.
Yeah.
And my voice is one of my biggest sources right now of gender dysphoria, which is dysphoria is when you feel like who you are doesn't match how you're presenting or how people are seeing you. You can imagine people call me on the phone and they're like, is Anna there? And I'm like, yep, this is Anna. And they're like, oh, right?
Yeah.
So like, it's not that they don't mean anything. It's not like a big, no one's intending to hurt me, but like, it's just a reminder over and over that I don't fit into the group that I wished I fit into. So yeah, it does hurt to answer your question.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I know that's, you know, that's a bit vulnerable. So thanks for trusting us in that space.
I'm here for it.
Yeah, good. you know, it's hard to tell every time we experience microaggressions what the motive is behind the person who said it, right? In the most recent episode of our podcast, Liliana gives a few examples on how to address microaggressions as they come. And some strategies that were included was stating what happened, ask some uncomfortable questions, and then make it clear that good intentions are not the point, or not like enough. I feel like these strategies come very natural to some, but painfully uncomfortable to others. So my question for you is, where do you feel you fall in this spectrum? More is it natural or is it painful? And what advice would you give others, or a pep talk to yourself if it's not natural, for those that this would be hard for them to use these strategies?
To be honest, I feel like I am mostly not the kind of I'm very non-confrontational. I'm mostly not the kind of person who would say, hey, that hurt.
Yeah.
I am a little better at it with friends because I, especially if I know and trust that somebody will respond well. And the way I used to be, I would never say anything to somebody I didn't know very well. There are two stories that came to mind when I was autistically scripting ahead of the things I was going to say for this episode.
Yeah.
One was a dentist appointment that I had last year, and I went to this dentist because they were on an LGBTQ group that I'm a part of, and they had advertised as being LGBTQ friendly, and I was like, that sounds great. I'll go to the queer dentist.
Yeah.
And when I showed up at their office, although the dentist herself was gay, her staff had obviously never interacted with a trans person before.
Oh.
And I felt like they're practice trans in a lot of ways.
They're what?
Practice trans, like they're practicing on me to like know how to deal with other trans people. So there's just a lot of like weird little flubs they made. Like when they saw my name, they're like, oh, is that the name you like to go by? And I'm like, I mean, it's my name. Like,
yeah.
My name's Anna. Call me Anna.
Oh, okay.
And like, they just kind of went over the top to like, to an uncomfortable level to like try to like make sure I was okay and not upset and not angry and like just a lot of weird stuff. But it was so unnerving, and it was all microaggressions. There was nothing, there's no one big bad thing anybody did.
Yeah.
But it was so unnerving to me that my first impulse was to just ghost and never go back.
Yeah.
But eventually I did send a message by way of the dentist's partner who had advertised. But the message got back to the dentist that I had had a bad experience. Mm. And the dentist's first response was like, I told my staff to do this right. I'm going to give him a talking to. And I was like, no, that's...
yeah.
None of that is like what I want.
Right.
So, I don't know. It was interesting that I actually felt like I could say something. Mm-hmm. And also, I wouldn't normally do that. And it didn't necessarily go the way I wanted it to.
Yeah.
Another story of something, a different sort of response was, it was a microaggression that happened at this church. There was a guest pastor who used me as an example without asking my permission ahead of time.
Mm.
And it didn't, that one actually didn't personally hurt me very much. I could tell that it was somebody who really meant well and was just really excited to see me. And I do tend to be more of an intentions person.
Mm.
Intentions matter a lot to me. That's a, yeah. Hmm. So, after I was used as an example, I wasn't really going to do anything about it, but multiple members of the congregation came up to me afterward and checked in and said, are you okay? That's not okay for them to do that. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk to them and like, we're going to make sure that stuff like that doesn't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt a lot of care.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I think that I feel best when somebody else notices a microaggression and does something from a, you know, place of care, not confrontation and anger.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that was, so is it more so maybe for you, it's like for the first example, was it a little easier because it wasn't like immediate response and it wasn't in person that it made it a little easier?
It is usually easier for me to follow up, later and by text or email.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think it's harder for me to express. It's harder for me to engage in conflict verbally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm one of those people where, like, it seems like there's always people where I will text them about something that's sort of difficult to talk about, and then they'll just, like, call me back right away. And I'm like, no, just keep texting. I can control my reactions. I can think about myself when I'm texting. So, yeah.
Well, let's hope we don't get into a big fight, because I'm someone who's I guess I'm the opposite of that. People say confrontational. I don't like that. But I would probably be someone who would call and be like, hold on, let's figure this out. So
I value that, though. And I think that if you have trust in the relationship, I can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll figure it out when we get into a big fight, how we handle this. So awesome. Well, thank you so much, Anna. Is there anything else that we haven't discussed about microaggressions, about anything really, that you would like to share with us in this podcast?
This is the long pause. I think, one thing that bears saying is just the reminder to remember that every person is different and has their own thresholds of comfort and discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
And I am someone, I transitioned very publicly. I'm a teacher. I told my students ahead of time before I transitioned. So my transition has been wide open for everybody to see. Also, I transitioned, in my 40s, early 40s. And I think that comes with some life experience and some personality stuff.
Mm.
So I do like questions, and I do like it when people engage me about this. I do like when people are curious and ask questions from a place of care. But as you've said, not everybody feels that way. So I think if you're going to talk to a person, I think this is true from any marginalized group, try to figure out, try to get to know the person first and mm-hmm. before you start like digging in and asking questions and see what sorts of things that person is comfortable with. Mm-hmm. You also brought up dead naming. My dead name is Joel. That was my name that my parents gave me. Mm-hmm. I actually still really like that name and I kept it as my middle name.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's
and
cool.
And so, yeah, the name itself doesn't hold a lot of bad feelings for me.
Yeah.
I do sometimes, people that I've known, excuse me, people that I've known for a long time will get into the habit of saying, Joel, I mean Anna. And when that happens over and over, then that starts to hurt.
Mm.
But talking about my dead name, bringing it up, it doesn't bother me. I mean, that's not true for everybody.
Mm.
So I think that's just an example of like what's a microaggression for one person isn't a microaggression for everyone.
Yeah, that's
it's,
true.
It's good to actually know a person.
Yeah. That's a really good point. Yeah. No, that's good to know. Cause yeah, not that rule. Cause like that rule I heard about recently of dead naming, I was like it was a very negative experience. I was not a part of it, but I witnessed it. And it was very traumatic for the person, and that the person who did it felt awful. And mm-hmm. so because it was such a negative experience that I saw, I was like, oh yeah, never do that. Not yes. okay under any circumstances.
Yes.
But now obviously it makes sense. Like not every single person will have that reaction.
I think it's okay to hear something like that and say, I'll take that on as a rule of thumb, but not like as this is a rule because, my brain just froze.
Yeah.
Because I think that if we're bound by rules all the time, it rules out relationships.
Yeah.
And I think that fear can keep you from actually having a relationship and being able to engage mm-hmm. honestly with somebody. And if a rule keeps you from doing that, I think that you need to examine that rule.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. Thank you for sharing that. I always learn so much when I chat with you, Anna, so I appreciate that. Hopefully our listeners have learned more about you and microaggressions and who we are as a church and all that good stuff. So
Yeah. I'm happy to be in this church and I always like chatting with you too.
Oh, thanks. Thanks so much. Appreciate you being here with us. And our listeners, thank you so much for listening in at the last stop, and you'll hear from us again soon. Take care.